nanohub.org.
You can follow along with this presentation using printed slides from the NanoHub. Visit www.nanohub.org and download the PDF file containing the slides for this presentation. Print them out and turn each page when you hear the following sound. Enjoy the show.
So in this lecture, I'm going to try to explain with intuitive arguments what this recursive Green function algorithm is and how to solve the negative equations rapidly, and give you insight what the steps are and relate that to physical insight. I'm assuming that you've seen and got to love those typical negative equations. In negative, you have two major components to understand transport. One has to do with the dynamics, with the states of the system, meaning where are the states? Just like in optics, what are the states and the propagation constants in optics? You solve a wave equation, in a sense, with Green functions, for example. In electron transport, you have to do one more. You've got to do the bean counting, meaning electron hopping in, electron hopping out. What does it do to the potential and the charge distribution? Okay? So now you have to control that charge flow. So you have to deal with the occupation of the states, not only the existence of the states. Because photons, you can stick in as many as you want into a state, right? But electrons are fermions, they're not bosons. So you got to keep track of them. Also, they carry charge, whereas photons don't carry charge. So they interact via charge. All right, so the typical equation you need to solve is some Hamiltonian, E minus H, with boundary conditions that couple you to the contacts, and some scattering self-energies. And so GR is sort of the impulse response. The boundary conditions deal with typically scattering in from the left and scattering in from the right. These are the scattering self-energies. And then sigma r deals with the outscattering into other channels. And that is proportional to the states themselves. But that gives you sort of how you could scatter out. That doesn't give you the population of the states that will scatter out and will scatter in. That is the second set of equations. That deals with this so-called G less than or Gn, where you compute, due to source terms, the boundary conditions inject carriers, and the scattering from other channels might inject carriers. And those are the sources, and they get propagated into the system, and that result in charge. And then the boundary self-energies look like this. There's coupling to the left times occupation on the left, and coupling on the right times occupation of the right. And then there's scattering self-energies that depend, again, on the filling of the states themselves. So scattering makes this whole thing very complicated. And typically, what you do is, as a first cut, you assume that there is no scattering. Okay, so you leave out all these scattering self-energies, and you deal with a coherent system. Okay, so let's do that first. So if you deal with a coherent system, what you might want to do is consider a device like this, a resonant tunneling diode. What a surprise. So here is your electrostatic potential and the conduction band edge of the emitter, a double barrier, and then the contact. And what you want to compute is, number one, you need to compute the open boundary conditions on the left and the far right. And then you want to say, I'm going to treat the whole emitter as a reservoir and the whole collector as a reservoir. And I don't want to compute non-equilibrium Green functions in these reservoirs. I just want to compute the density of states. But I want to treat the whole reservoir as a contact to the central device. That means I have to calculate scattering energies, in-scattering self-energies and out-scattering self-energies at these interfaces that are shown with the dashed lines. So the intuitive answer of what you do is, you start out from a boundary condition from flat bands that you can compute, and you migrate it in numerically up to this point here in the emitter. And you do the same from the right contact. So you treat the whole device explicitly, quantum mechanically, but you do only the carrier dynamics, the occupation of states in Negev, only in the central device. So that's a priori your process. So what you want to do is, you have some flat band boundary conditions that sit way out here, and you want to obtain a scattering self-energy at this site here. And an in-scattering is then just determined by that scattering matrix times the occupation on the left. Same on the right. You want to obtain a self-energy that couples you from n to n minus 1. And you can compute that from a right connected green function here. And the scattering self-energy that occupies these states, that injects these states from the right, are derived from this real self-energy times the occupation on the right. So then you end up with a Hamiltonian that you need to do non-equilibrium green functions for, that is just defined on the central device nodes, where now the central device nodes have these boundary self-energies on them. And you solve for this, and then you solve for the G less than. So how do you do that? So let's assume you have a long device, and you have a tridiagonal Hamiltonian like this. That corresponds to this RTD, right? We discretize this whole RTD. So let's overlay that tridiagonal matrix on top of this RTD, like this. Okay, so we have our potential profile, electrostatics, and it's buried in all of these matrix elements here. Right, so you have the diagonal matrix elements and the off-diagonal matrix elements. And this is a sketch, meaning there's about 100 nanometers or more here in the emitter. So that's like 400 numerical sites. Then you have about 5 nanometer barriers, 5 nanometer well, and another 5 nanometer barrier. That's again some 20 plus 20, some 20 sites, 60 sites. And then on the right you have again 100 nanometers ballpark, that's 400 sites. That means in terms of computational load, the contacts are far larger than the central region. Okay? That is also the driver for us to say, if we want to do non-equilibrium green functions in true non-equilibrium and we can treat these long regions in equilibrium, let's do that. If we know intuitively they are in equilibrium, let's use that information. And we treat only the device region that is truly out of equilibrium to be out of equilibrium. All right. So, let's assume that you have about 400 plus 400 plus 60 sites. Let's call that, under friends, 1,000, right? 500 to 1,000 sites. And let's assume you wanted to do this in a multiband calculation, where instead of these sites being a 1x1 matrix for effective mass, but they were a 10x10 matrix, your matrix would suddenly be pretty large. Right? Even this sparse matrix would be of the order of 500 by 500 to a 10,000 by 10,000, depending on your choice of bases and how many nodes you have on the device. So suddenly this device would be rather large. So in MATLAB, you can calculate inverses of matrices, right? It's very easy. You define a matrix, you type Eich of matrix, or Eich S if you want to have a sparse matrix. But what it will do is it'll calculate the eigenvalues of the whole thing, or the inverse, if you wanted to have the inverse of that matrix, right? In G, in the green function, we would need the inverse because we want to solve the green functions. But is it really true that we need the full inverse? And the answer is no. We don't need the inverse of this whole full matrix. So in a full matrix, this might be 500 by 500 to 10,000 to 10,000, and the inverse is full. That's a pretty big matrix to store and to compute. And again, you don't necessarily need all of those matrix elements. So you would compute a whole lot of things that you really don't need. So, just to give you an idea, to store the Hamiltonian, it's about a half a megabyte. To store a 10,000 by 10,000 matrix in complex double precision, that is roughly 1.6 gigabyte. Just to put that in perspective, okay? And you're storing a whole bunch of things you don't need. Plus, it would be very expensive to compute. Okay. Also, it would be detrimentally expensive to compute. So if you had a standard operation count to do this inverse, and you do this in n cubed, you might use 10 to the 12 operations. If you use the tridiagonal LU approximation, which scales as n squared, you might have 10 to the 8 operations. And if you do a cursive green function approach that scales as n to the 1, you have about 10 to the 4 operations. You can make this a factor of 10 to the 8 faster. So let's learn how to do that. Okay? By the way, if you do that once, that would be fine, right? But once is not enough. You need to do this somewhere between 100 to 1,000 energies. You need to do that 100 times to 1,000 times because we have all these energy resolved properties, right? And you do this for 5 to 7 iterations because you do a Hartree self-consistent calculation, right? And it doesn't converge in one step. And you do that for 10 to 100 bias points to resolve an IV. So you need this GR about 200,000 times. So even if you did your HERA experiment and did this through a full inverse, which you can do in MATLAB for small matrices, you really, really don't want to do that. Okay. So compare, if you call this 1 second, this would take 3.2 years, and you don't get further information. You don't gain anything. Okay. So what is it you really need? Let's assume that you don't do incoherent scattering and you don't have charge effects. You don't care about charge. You just do a Thomas Fermi calculation for the charge and all you want is get the current. Okay? And the details are, by the way, here in this publication. So what you really need is one diagonal block of this inverse. You don't need the full inverse. You need the one diagonal block. It's kind of interesting, right? And what's your physical insight for that? Well, if it's a coherent transport through the device, that means current is continuous throughout the device. There's no current loss, no current gain. And there's no channels where you inject at a high energy and retrieve at a low energy, right? It's all happening at the same energy, at any energy given time. That means current does not change throughout the device. It's constant. So you can compute the current at every cross-section you would care, it will be the same. So let's pick one that's convenient. So we pick one here right at this edge. And all you really need is a current operator element that makes your electron hop from one side to the next side. So you, in principle, you need one off-diagonal matrix element. And in this formulation, you can show you already need just one diagonal matrix element as well. Okay? So instead of computing the inverse of the whole thing, you need to find the inverse of one block. Okay? That could be a significant savings if you knew how to peel out that one block out of this matrix. So how would you do that? So what you do is, and I'll walk you through the math, you start with a left connected green function and you march it inside of the device. And you start from a right connected green function and you march it in from the right. And you connect the two on one side, that gives you one true inverse of GR at that one site. Then the next question, you got to learn how to do that, right? Once you have that, you can get the currents. So if you have charge effects, if you really want to know what the charge is in the device, you got to do a little bit more, meaning the quantum mechanical charge. So here, you need to compute these matrix elements that are sort of in round. Okay? So let me give you some intuition why that is. So again, underneath, I've sort of in light gray, you see the device, right? So on the left, we said we treat the whole thing in equilibrium. So what we need are the diagonal matrix elements, just the density of states, the imaginary part of GR. That means we only need the diagonal matrix elements, the inverses of GR. So that's true on the left, and that's true on the right. And then we said, okay, we're going to inject carriers out of these emitters and the collectors into the central device region, and we treat it in non-equilibrium. So you got to ask the question, if I injected an electron at this site on the left, what's its probability to be found here, 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 and here? So you do a probability density study, so to speak, to catch an electron that came from the left, so you need that upper row here. And you do the same from the right, where you said, what would it take for an electron to be injected from the right, and what's the probability to find it on these sites throughout the device? Okay? So you catch them, so to speak, after injecting from the right and the left on the respective sites you care for, and you add those contributions. So at the end, that means out of this whole big matrix that could be potentially 10,000 by 10,000, you only need the diagonal blocks in the emitter and the collector, and you need the off-diagonal blocks, one row or one column, in the non-equilibrium region. Clearly more work than the previous case when we just did current. So how do you do that? So you march all the way down with a left connected green function, and you connect it, and you march all the way back up. If you do that, you have connected the left and the right contact for all the device. So you have information for all the diagonal matrix elements of the inverse. Once you have one diagonal matrix element here, you can start walking sideways over here and over here. Okay? All right. The beautiful thing about this algorithm is that its operation count goes as n times b cubed, where n is the number of sites and b is the block size. Block meaning if you have a 10 by 10 matrix, it would be 10 cubed because you end up having to invert each block. So typically for multiband structures and RTDs, you might have block sizes from 10 to 20 and you might have 1,000 sites. So basically, you have an order n algorithm to solve this problem, rather than an n cubed algorithm. Okay? So let's do that. So we start from a tridiagonal E minus H, like this. This is our matrix. And what we have is on the left up here, we want to fold in the self energy, like this. So we want to isolate this whole point where we concatenated basically the whole semi-infinite left contact into a single self-energy, now we have a sigma here. So from the previous slide, that was no sigma. And if we include a sigma, we basically included the whole semi-infinite contact on the left. So let's forget about the distinction between sigmas on the diagonal, etc. We just write them as here are diagonal matrix elements and here are off-diagonal matrix elements. And we want to solve this matrix GR equal 1. So to get the left-connected green function, we just start with this block and we take the inverse that gives us a G0. And we do the same from the right and it gives us a GR on the right. So let's do that. We have a GR that's only connected to the semi-infinite lead going to the left. So now we say, well, that GR is connected with some T's to the next matrix element. We can compute it with this RGF algorithm where we can get the G that's now connected to the semi-infinite lead to the left plus one matrix element by this expression. Then we can expand this Hamiltonian further and make it a little bit bigger. We can get G that's now connected to the semi-infinite lead up to side 2. Then side 3, then side 4, and obviously you can generalize that. Where now you see that you have a diagonal matrix element hopping G to the left from before and hopping. So in a sense, to get from side I minus 1, you are connected to, in addition to side I on the left and side I on the right, and you have a diagonal matrix element I, you take the inverse, that gives you a G II that is now derived from a G I minus 1 I minus 1. You can do the same thing and march through the whole structure and connect to the right. Then, if you do that for the very last site, this last block is special. It is right connected already. It's the right collected solution. That means you have obtained, if you marched all the way down here, you've obtained one true block of GR. That's the one matrix block that is the true inverse block. All right, so let's assume you have that block, and now you want to find the true inverses of these diagonals. So now you do the other way around. You have a true inverse and you have all your left connected green functions. So here's left connected on n minus 2, n minus 2. And you have matrix elements that connect you back. There's a recursion you can write down that looks like this, where if you want to get the truly connected n minus 2, n minus 2, you start from the n minus 2, n minus 2 left connected one, and connected through a hopping from this guy to this guy and back plus one, and that connects, gets you disk G. This you can generalize and you can start to migrate all the way back. It's hard to see on this background here. So the interesting part is that the forward recursion, you end up having to do a full inverse of a block, but it's only of the size of a block. Versus this is only matrix multiplies, which is very simple. Scale, so this scales, this is why RGF scales as block sized cubed, because this is the dominating factor. So this way you can march down and march back up, and you include the inverses of these blocks, and this is why the scales as n times block cubed. This guy includes the simple block multiplication, so it scales as n times block square, which is negligible in typical cases. So it's a little bit slower by a factor of 10 to 40 if your block size is 10 to 40. All right, so here are the general expressions to get diagonal matrix elements of the inverse. So if you ever only wanted to know what the true inverses of a block tridiagonal matrix are, this is the fastest method known to man right now to get these inverses. All right. Now then, if we only need the current, we need this one diagonal block. So we march not to the very end, we just march to here and we march up from below to this point, and we get that matrix element, and we can calculate the current. Now if we need to get these blocks here that also have the non-equilibrium charge, we march down, we march back up, we march to that point over here, and then we can march out into the off-diagonal matrix elements. And the way you do that is you start out from a fully connected green function, and you have a left connected green function, and with that, these two matrix elements, you can compute off-diagonal matrix elements. If you have one off-diagonal matrix element and another diagonal one, you can compute this next guy. If you have one guy, you can compute this guy and the next guy. And you can basically march out on the diagonal. And you only do that with very simple matrix multiplies, no inverses. So these are the routes. So you start from a diagonal, you need all the diagonal left connected ones, and that allows you to march out onto a column or a row of that matrix. Of course, you can do the same thing from the left, just like from the right, just the indices are slightly different. And that is how you can compute selectively just a few elements into that inverse of the matrix. Okay? So that being said, hello? Oh, okay. So again, this operation count here is, that's the beautiful part, it's n times block cubed. That's an order n algorithm in principle compared to an order n cubed algorithm if you just went into MATLAB and typed inverse of that matrix. And here are the equations that you need to then solve charge and current. So if you only want current, you only need GRII. And if you want charge and current, you need some rows of off-diagonal matrix elements, and you sum those up in the non-equilibrium region. So here's the, if you want to do this in general for block matrices, block tridiagonal matrices, here's the summary of the equations. Make sure you write down every I and J and plus one appropriately. All right? So that should give you at least a little bit of an intuitive overview, if not the detailed math, of how this works. Everything is clear as mud. So just imagine I had started out my lectures with this. All right? I mean, you're only really going to do this and understand it if you actually do it, if you start to sit down and code it and look at the math carefully. This is not stuff you can teach and in some way say, oh, this is very clean. Okay? The equations are all there. They're defined. They're in the lecture notes, so you can get them. The advice is, if you use MATLAB and you type Ike of H, you're wasting a lot of your time and a lot of energy on your computer. Okay? Or actually inverse of H. Okay? Okay? Everything clear? Okay. Thank you.